You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
The 3CR Gardening Show is coming to you today from the Woi Wurrung Nation. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of this land. We recognise the practices of care and cultivation of the land and waters by the First Peoples and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Wherever you are and wherever you garden, we encourage you to know whose land you're on.
Good morning, gardening folks, flower fanciers and plant lovers. You have tuned into the 3CR Gardening Show. Happy Sunday to those of you tuning in live and a big hello to those of you getting your gardening show goodness via the podcast. My name is Chloe Thompson and in the studio with me today we have Amy Downey. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning to everyone who got a little extra sleep in this morning. Few minutes extra.
And good morning to Fermi DeSouza. Souza.
Good morning.
Lovely to have you here in your big bunch of plants that you've put on the table.
There's yummy things here, folks. Yummy things.
Not yummy, but definitely beautiful. And that third voice that you just heard was Meryl Johnson. So welcome.
Good morning, everyone. At last. And thank you to all the people who are now texting in and clogging up the lines, telling us that you can hear us. Thank you so much for answering our desperate plea.
A cry for
help.
That
was so bizarre. So bizarre. So sorry about that, folks. The wonders of radio. I'm sitting here with a pile of knobs and buttons, and it turns out one of those knobs was not turned correctly. So everything else was correct, but one knob. And it completely stuffed
it's
us up.
Often so the way.
It's often the way, isn't it?
Yes.
I know. And I think because other people, you know, obviously there's all these different radio shows and things that come from this same studio. Mm. It depends on how the previous people left it. So
yes.
Anyway.
We're here now and having fun on this glorious morning.
Absolutely.
Well, some people are in the fog apparently, but there is blue sky up there, I can tell you.
I came through pea soup, but Meryl assures me there will be blue sky.
Blue sky up there.
Oh, that does sound beautiful. Now, there is something I realised when I looked at the guests for today's show. I haven't hosted any of you three before, and in fact I don't even really know the three. I feel like I know you because I've heard your voices, but I've realized I actually don't know any of you. So I thought we could start with a little bit of who are you and what's your garden?
What a good idea.
Yeah. So who wants to start down the line?
Amy?
We'll start on the left.
Sure,
okay, let's
sure.
Go.
Yes, I know it's so nice to finally be on with you too, Chloe, because it feels like it's been a long time coming, but also I've only been on a couple of shows, so it's nice to. I actually was reminiscing that I think my second ever show, which really wasn't that long ago, was with Fermi and Meryl. So it's lovely to be back in the studio with you and catch up on what's happened as time has passed. But so, yes, anyone who doesn't know, and for you, Chloe, I work at the Royal Botanic Gardens, the Melbourne site.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm the curator of the Camellia Collection.
Yep.
Wow,
which
lucky
is
you.
Good time of year to be in there at the moment. It's looking beautiful. And I do have to say the ginkgos as well that are starting to fall.
Some of my favourites.
Golden carpet throughout the collection. It's stunning at the moment.
Yes.
And all those sasanquas. But then also I look after the Grey Garden collection as well, which is sort of completely opposite. It's very exposed. It's very hot, harsh, grey foliage plants, so a lot of climate-adapted species. And then as part of that too is the Grey Garden escarpment. So we do a little bit of rock climbing and abseiling on this site to, I think we sort of use it as like a little bit of a space to host an ex situ collection of threatened cliff-dwelling species.
Mm.
So it's a very protected site. You're not really going to be able to access it unless you bring your own ropes and climb it.
Not recommended.
Not recommended. So it's a great protected site in that sense. But again, very exposed, north-facing, hot, sunny. It's been an amazing journey over the past few years, not only learning to climb, but also seeing how plants actually are able to thrive in these really harsh conditions, these rocky conditions, some of them growing out of very little soil and mostly rock, and they're doing amazing.
And what's some of the features, really special plants that are in there? Because it is such a highly adapted environment.
Yeah, so some of my favourites that I love, even just, again, the journey of planting them and seeing how well they're doing. So one that I always speak about, which I actually think I spoke about last time I was on air, was the Westringia cremnophila.
Yes.
And so this is a threatened species that was wild collected from by Dave Roberts, who's one of our horticulturalists, and also by members of our science team from the herbarium. They went on this incredible, I think, couple-week or one-week journey kayaking down the Snowy River, and they found this Westringia growing very low on this steep cliff face, and they were able to just scramble up a little bit to collect it. And I shared last time that we've actually had no luck growing it, at least well, but really growing it in any other areas of the gardens. Even in the nursery, it seems to struggle quite a bit. But on the escarpment, thriving.
That's its home.
Yeah, that's its home. Yes, yeah. It's doing so well. Again, very little water, but it's just, it's doing the best out of all the trialed spots. Wow. Yeah, so that I would say
in
is
in its
one of my
natural
favorite.
Environment, is it quite low down close to the water of the Snowy River? No.
Not normally. So it was sort of a lucky collection, because I think it's not normally that low. And they did scramble up a little bit, but they were lucky to be able to collect it, because I think normally it is much harder to reach.
Mm.
Yeah.
How exciting.
What
fun. Isn't it
fun? Yes.
Oh, the world of plants is endlessly fascinating, isn't it?
It is. Oh, forever learning.
Forever learning.
You'll never be bored.
No. Never bored.
Amy, I actually went to Lightscapes on Thursday last week.
Yes.
Absolutely loved it.
I missed it last week, but I hope to go again maybe next week. And I've heard it's the best one yet.
Oh, it was magic. My son.
Was it?
Yeah. My youngest son and I, we went, we reckon it was two years ago.
Yep.
And he loved it then.
Yep.
And so then I had the chance to go on Thursday night, and I took the whole family.
Yes.
And so my kids are 12 and 14, and they're like, Mum, this is amazing.
Oh, now that's a good tip, because I've got identical twin grandsons that we're extremely proud of course.
Of course.
And they are lovely little boys, but they're 11. And you sort of think, well, they're on the verge of sort of teenage years.
Yeah.
What sort of things do they really enjoy other than chasing balls around madly, which they seem to spend most of their life doing?
Yes.
And that's a great idea, great tip.
To see the garden too in the nighttime, which is so unusual.
It's so discombobulating.
It is.
I'd come around a corner and I'd be like, what?
Where am I?
But then you'd go around another corner and you'd go, okay, yeah, now I know where I am. But yeah, it was really bizarre.
Yeah. I think they would love it, actually. It is. Yeah. It's a really fun thing to do with family or friends, but I feel like it's kind of an all ages thing.
It is, definitely all ages. Yeah. My 14-year-old had a few things to say about the K-pop when we came around the corner and there was K-pop. It's like, oh no, I don't like this bit, Mum.
Some questionable, questionable song choices at times, and no.
So no, highly recommend that one at the Bot Gardens if anyone wants to get along and see it. It's really worthwhile. All right, Femi, you're up. So give me the elevator pitch on who's Femi and where's your garden?
Femi, at present my partner Will and I garden in central Victoria in a little town called Reedsdale. And we have a one-acre block, which is mostly weeds. we did build a couple of rock gardens, and we try to grow a lot of things. Our specialty would have to be bulbs.
Okay.
And we brought a little selection of them here today. There's probably, I don't know, a few hundred different types of daffodil flowering at different times of the year, because most people tend to think of daffodils as September.
Mm.
We get daffodils that flower in March and April, which are the autumn flowering species that come from the Mediterranean.
Okay.
And they're lovely.
Yeah. And they're more closely related to the Jonquilla rather than the big King Alfred type.
And often have the most beautiful scent, Fermi.
They have weird scents.
Yes.
Subjective.
the green-flowered one was described by one of my botanical friends as having a smell like semen.
Oh! It's a bit like Manchurian pears.
So anyway, and which is interesting because he actually has no sense of smell, but it was told that.
Well, he's probably not a reliable witness.
But but then our main number of daffodils flower in August, September, okay. And we have one that lingers on till October. So we have, it's quite a long stretch of daffodils. I was thinking of bringing one in today, but we have a big problem in our area with red-legged earth mites.
Ah. Oh, they're rascals, aren't they?
Devastate plants like daffodils.
I can imagine.
So I have one hoop petticoat that looks decent, and I didn't want to pick it.
No, don't
do that. And what do they do? Is it the bulb?
They're earth mites. They look a bit like spider mites, but they're black-bodied with red legs, and red-legged earth mites. They will scrape away at the plants. They're a bit like thrip.
Yeah.
Right. Get on the backs of the leaves and scrape it all away. Yeah.
We can't grow a juga in our garden.
Oh,
they actually eat it to pieces. And things like lacanalias in the garden, they were looking fine, and then I noticed holes in them, in the leaves. And the earth mites were actually scraping away at the surface until there was a hole. They do the same thing to all the daffodil flowers and things like that. They are susceptible to, not glyphosate, what's the other thing that we use on just pyrethrum.
Oh, okay.
That's a nice safe thing. But, of course, you can't spray all the daffodil flowers with pyrethrum because bees are affected by pyrethrum as well. One of my gardening friends up there in Central Victoria's Ray Mills, and I asked him, how do you deal with red-legged earth mites? And he goes, well, the clue is in the name. They're earth mites. So he grows things in pots off the ground.
Oh, right. Yes.
And they don't seem to know how to climb up that high. So
little legs.
Yeah. I was trying to wonder if there was a predator mite or a predator for them.
Possibly. I haven't researched that, but yeah.
Yeah.
I remember years ago one of our friends, before we moved to the country, one of our friends in Yay used to talk about red-legged earth mites all the time, and I thought, what was she going on about? Then we found out.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm currently the president of the Alpine Garden Society Victorian Group, and we run different functions through the year.
Which are enormous fun.
And we are going to be having something in August. So, not August, October.
Okay.
I'm also at Fernie Creek Horticultural Society. They're doing a bi-swap sell on the 1st of August.
Okay.
And that is the best fun. It's just a bun fight. When it opens, everyone just makes a dash. Now, if you thought that gardeners were nice, polite, gentle people, normally they are, 99% of the time, they are the most gorgeous people, but they seem to develop very large elbows and impressive knees at the buy, swap and sell opening moment, because the idea is you just go and, you know, choose the things that you like and you can either buy it or swap something that the other person wants, or if you have it and somebody else wants it, you can sell it. So you've got some money to go and buy somebody else's plants. And I always think, you know, having been a nursery person all my life, I always reckon other people's plants are somehow
better.
they do have that allure.
Okay, so hang on. Let's spell the date out again for this.
So the buy swap sell at Fernie Creek, 100 Hilton Road, Sassafras, is on the 1st of August.
August.
You can wish your horses a happy birthday and then come up to Fernie Creek. It's starting earlier this year. It's going to start at 12.
Okay.
I don't think the kitchen is going to be working, so BYO thermos and sandwiches. There will be, this year there is going to be a $5 charge per car.
Oh, okay.
So it isn't completely free, but it isn't per person. It's so you can fit
pile your friends in.
10 yeah. people into a car and you just pay $5. So,
yeah. Okay.
So that's at Ferny Creek. We've got a number of sellers lined up already, including Alan Ayton, who people who came to Ferny Creek Expo in March would have seen his impressive array of rock and alpine plants, mm-hmm. including some Australian natives, mostly Tasmanian alpines, and people like Gislardi, who is a grower of exceptional South African plants and mm-hmm. Perennials, and he sells seed as well in competition with you, Meryl.
No, we do different things. and what's more, we like each other. So.
Yes, and yeah, so there are a few others. There's about 10 lined up so far, but mm-hmm. we're still open to others to come along. It was started as a way of Ferny Creek members having a place to offload or share around some of their own produce and
yes.
Their spare bulbs and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and it sort of developed from there. So
that does sound fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to note. Good to note. All right, Meryl, your turn.
Well, where do I garden? I garden in the foothills of the Baw-Baw Ranges in a beautiful district called Neerham.
Okay.
It's just beautiful green rolling hills surrounded by big mountain ash forests and looking up to the Baw-Baw Ranges. So it's a very wonderful place. Oh, gosh, I wish I hadn't said that because now everybody
will come to visit.
Because it's only about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half if you're enjoying the scenery out of Melbourne, and so lots of people come up at the weekends. It's a very beautiful area. And my husband David and I, for our sins, have created 2.5 acres of very intensive garden because we're mad plant people, just absolutely besotted with plants. So my first passion was for species geraniums and campanulas, and having discovered that there were over 400 different campanulas in the family, of course I had to have all of them. And I just sort of went on from there. And so we accidentally started a specialist perennial nursery. I say accidentally because it really was an accident. We went away overseas, and of course, both being mad keen gardeners, we collected up seed. Excuse me. And it was in the days when you could actually bring plants and seeds into Australia via the proper authorities under mm-hmm. inspection, but you could actually bring things in. So we found that we could fit an awful lot of seed into a suitcase and managed to get quite a lot of it to germinate. So I grew all these plants, and one day I looked at them and I thought, I haven't even got room in 2.5 acres to plant all these plants. So I rang up my dad and said, Dad, bring the truck. And we loaded up with plants, headed down the Prince's Highway, and we just thought we'd stop at every nursery that we saw, so we did, mm-hmm. and we sold all the plants.
Mm. Ah.
The only problem was they then said, are you coming back next week? So that was the start of Country Farm Perennials Nursery, which was our livelihood right up until COVID times, which, we were really having difficulty delivering live plants to people all over Australia and getting them in time that they were still alive. So we fell to the idea that we would send the seed instead of the actual plants, thinking, well, that'll just get us and our staff through COVID. Well, that was an even bigger success. So now that's what we do. We send seed to gardeners all over Australia, and we have special licences so we can send into Tasmania and Western Australia.
Mm.
And what we try and do is provide for keen gardeners, collectors and beginners, and especially cut flower growers. That's actually something that has really taken off that we're so happy about. That there's lots of micro flower growers
yes.
who are just growing, perhaps even in their backyard. They're not even a big concern. Yeah. They're supplying either at a little farm gate shop at at the front gate, mm-hmm. or just their local florists, or going to their local markets and
yep.
shows and things. And it's wonderful. Mm. Why would you bother flying with carbon miles and all nasty old fuel all the way from Europe or South America or wherever, Mexico, flowers, when you can nip around the corner? And so that's what we do. We try and, well, we're just mad about flowers, basically. So we try and provide the most beautiful and interesting and different flowers, colours. I'm by the way, an artist in another life.
Ooh.
And so with an artistic eye, we're really interested in beauty and a design in the garden and yeah. colour and texture and foliage. So, yeah, basically we just have a hell of a good time.
It sounds like it.
I feel like art and gardening, they really go well together. Like I often hear of maybe people having moved from the arts into gardening. Like I yes. feel like they go really well. So yeah.
You're yeah. right, yes.
I'm amazed to hear that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and at the same time, gardening becomes a creative outlet.
Yeah.
Even if we don't, for most of my life, I would have said I was not a creative person. And, you know, I can't even, it was probably only maybe 10 years ago and I was, you know, at dinner with some gardening friends and they were talking about artists and being creative and I went, I'm so not creative.
Oh, yes,
and they're
you
like,
are.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
And, but, you know, isn't that funny? Like, even if you're a gardener who's not an artist per se, like I can't draw or paint, but, you know, I still didn't think of myself as a creative person and yet it took some people turning around going, don't be silly.
Yeah, no, that's right. And as a trained artist, I can tell you gardening is the hardest art form of all because mm-hmm. not only do we garden in all three, create beautiful things in all three dimensions,
yes,
but we do it in time
yes.
as well.
We have to have
but
patience.
It's not a fixed point. It's constantly changing. I mean, when you do a painting,
yep.
you think, okay, that's great. I love it just at the point it is. And it's forever at that point.
Yes.
But gardening is forever not at the point.
You know? No, that
it's
is
charging.
So true.
And
yes.
every year is different. And you create all different beauties over time. So it is the most complex art form.
Yeah. Well, when you think of someone like Gertrude Jekyll, mm-hmm. who was an amazing
colourist.
Colourist, because she was an artist.
Yes.
But when her eyesight started to fail her, she decided she would paint by planting plants.
Oh.
And her gardens are designed to have this very beautiful effect because of the different colours of the plants.
It's a painting on a very large scale for her because she could see it.
Yeah. So she could see it whereas she couldn't use her brush anymore. She turned to that. And she's world-renowned for that.
And still, sort of 100 years after her death, her work is still, wow!
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, for those of you who've just tuned in and hopefully missed our little technical hiccup in the first, 3 or 4 minutes, big hello. You're listening to the 3CR Gardening Show. My name is Chloe Thompson. And in the studio with me today is Fermi D'Souza, Meryl Johnson and Amy Downey. I'm just having a look. It looks like there's a few text messages coming in saying, oh, dear, I thought my iPhone was not working and I couldn't hear you. Well, at least you were blaming the phone and not us. good morning, panel, and a big hello, Meryl. I got some Lachenalias. I want to plant them in pots. What potting mix should I use?
Fermi for Lachenalias.
Very well-drained potting mix.
Exactly. So like a cacti and succulent mix?
Possibly, but what I tend to do is buy a ordinary potting mix that does not have water crystals in it.
So like the non-premium stuff.
Well, you can be premium, but just no water crystals. Water
good
crystals
tip.
Hold the water too much when the bulbs are dying down.
Yep.
And then they'll rot.
Okay.
And I found this as a big problem. So I just buy something like the native plant mix.
Oh, yeah.
And then add an amount of grit.
Okay.
So something like coarse or washed river sand and make it about, I was going to make it like a cake. I was going to say 1 cup of this and that. But basically, you can go up to about a third of that. Some people actually have discovered that bulbs grow really well in ceramics.
Like terracotta pots?
Terracotta.
The porous ones.
They grow them in the beads, the ceramic beads.
Oh, I know what that is. Yes. Yes. They're like a clay bead. Yeah, They've got a technical name.
Clay expanded clay beads.
Yep.
And they've actually found that this isn't the best way to grow them.
Hmm.
I haven't tried it myself, but I've read a lot of this online, that they will plant them in these pots of beads because it gives them absolute perfect drainage.
Mm.
You do then, though, have to supply liquid fertilizer to them.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yes, because there's nothing in there for them.
There's no nutrient in the beads, although I think they get something out of them. But if you, for the ordinary gardener, just a wider than deep pot.
Yep, that's what I was picturing.
Yeah, and do not crock the bottom.
So no saucer?
No. Saucers are okay in the growth period.
Okay.
But don't put a crock. You know the old-fashioned thing? I saw somebody on Gardening Australia many years ago talking about crocking the bottom of the pot because that's what his grandfather taught him. And then he was wondering why his plants were rotting, so he put in a layer of sand above it. There is something called the perch water table, where if you crock the bottom, you basically add a layer of water to the pot.
Yeah.
So you don't do that. You can put in something like fly screen mesh
if you're worried
across the bottom of the pot to stop the soil washing through.
Yes, or critters getting in from under. Or Antechinus, little native animals getting up and eating the bulbs.
Yeah, so basically you can fill the pot with that. I do sometimes use broken up polystyrene as something at the bottom of the pot. If it's a deep pot and I don't want a lot of depth of root growth, I'll fill up the bottom few centimetres with broken up polystyrene because that's recycling in a way.
Yeah.
And then put the potting mix on top of that and a well-drained potting mix like that. So even an ordinary, I prefer something like the native plant mix. Mm-hmm. And then mix the extra grit through it and plant the bulbs on top of that.
Fermi, this is giving me food for thought because one of the bulbs that I absolutely love and have always, I just adore it, I'm besotted by it, but have always had trouble growing it because we have very rich and retentive sort of soil and very deep soil which holds a lot of moisture. And that's the Eremurus, the foxtail lilies. Mm. If you haven't met one before, let me introduce you to one of the princes of the gardening world. They are a bulb, a big bulb, with a
bit like a... it's sort of like a cross between a Eucomus and a starfish.
Yes, that's right. A Eucomus on multi-steroids because they are huge. The flower scapes can be taller than me. They really are enormous when they're well grown. And they live in hot, dry areas. So I'm not, well, yes, we're hot at times, but, you know, we don't dry out all that much. Mm. These are green rolling hills with lots of forests and mountains. So I've always had trouble growing them. And I think that your idea with, but the only way I can grow them is to put down a bed of gravel, plant the bulb on the bed of gravel and then surround it by gravel and then put some dirt over the top and, of course, there's the dirt down below. So it can get its roots down to, feed, but absolutely making sure you don't water it at all during the summer because they need that hot summer baking, dry dormancy to make those beautiful flowers. So I'm thinking of your ceramic beads as the bed to sit the bulb on and surround the bulb and that would give it absolute perfect dryness when it needs it.
Oh, well, if you try that, let us know how you go.
I will give it a go.
Go, Fermi. Yeah.
I was just going to say, Gary Reed, who's an excellent bulb grower and up in near Yakandanda, he told me the big problem, because he grows virtually all his bulbs in pots, and he said the trouble with the Eremurus is once the roots grow out and they hit the side of the pot, that kills them.
They've got to be out in the open ground.
They've got to be planted out or be in a very big pot.
Yes.
Mm. Oh.
One of my friends in Colorado annoyed me a lot by saying, oh, yes, the Aramuris are self-seeding into my lawn now.
Well, actually, they grow easily from seed. We cut flower growers absolutely love them. And I had a couple of our cut flower growers ring and say, oh, they're coming up like grass, you know. But that's not the hard bit. It's getting them through the summer, especially if we get, you know, summer rain. Rains, yes.
Well, I know Pat Toolan, who's a great grower of aral irises, and the arals, of course, come from areas like the Negev Desert in Israel. Mm. And she covers the aral beds with corrugated iron during summer.
Yes.
So if they do happen to get any rain, it doesn't hit them.
I was just thinking, Meryl, that actually sounds like a great one for the escarpment.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've got some Brunsvigia.
Do you know Brunsvigia? Yes, yes.
Doing really well up there, and I'm thinking if they're not liking...
I think you're onto something. And, boy, wouldn't that be spectacular.
It would be stunning. They would look amazing up there.
Look them up online. There are pictures of fields of them, well, not even fields, hillsides of them in places like the Hindu Kush. And they just look amazing, all these. And it's called the foxtail lily.
For obvious reasons.
Well named,
it's a gigantic fox's tail. And they come in beautiful colours. They can be white, pink, apricot, orange.
Wow.
Great range of colours. No blues, of course, or purples, but gorgeous colours, wonderful things.
Yeah. That sounds stunning. I'm going to put a call out for any listeners who have a gardening event that you'd like me to read out online. So, you know, a gardening festival, a plant show, a buy, swap and sell like we talked about earlier. Now would be the time to text message in or call in if you would like to. The phone number, if you'd like to talk to us on air, is 94190155. Or you can send us a text message on 0488 809 855. And I do have a little bit of an incentive for anyone who does want to talk to us on air today. Mm-hmm. I've got 3 copies of Organic Gardener magazine to give away, of which I am the editor. So if you do call in and are brave enough to talk to our very scary panel, then we would absolutely love to hear from you, and I will reward you with a beautiful magazine posted out to you. We've got the brand new issue that's on sale this week. And this issue is all focused on glasshouses, greenhouses, bushhouses. I think we have like 19 pages. So if you've ever been thinking, oh my gosh, I would love something. And I mean, we've featured glasshouses from the tiny little plasticky ones that you buy from, you know, the hardware stores, right through to converted hay sheds. So, you know, don't think that you've got a tiny garden, you can't have something. There will be something in the mag that will make you go, oh, yeah, I could do that.
And they're great because you don't sort of think of this time of the year as being a prime gardening time. No. But if you're sowing seed and you've got the ability to provide some extra heat, either with one of those bottom heat mats that you can buy from that big hardware store, they are wonderful.
Yeah.
Because we're just about to come to the turn of the season or you know, the days are just starting to get that little bit longer in next week. Perfect sowing time for seeds. If you can get that little bit of bottom heat and one of those, you can just have a little tiny one that fits against your kitchen wall.
Clear plastic tubs. That's what I use.
Turned upside down.
Clear plastic tub, and I put a little heat mat under it, and I have it inside with things like my summer crops that I start indoors on a heat mat.
Wow, I've never thought to do that.
Good old clear plastic tub is, what, $7? And I mean, you can so often get them on hard rubbish or, you know, something like that.
Even cheaper.
Well, it doesn't matter if they've got a crack in them it still does the job. And then I'll start them indoors and then I'll start to harden them off outside.
Yes.
And I do have a glass house as well. It's a very little glass house.
Do you want to explain the term harden off?
Well, yeah, good point. So the hardening off process, you know, if you've started a seedling indoors in a nice, warm, hot, humid environment that is a little plastic tub, you're safe. you basically need to gently introduce it into the big, scary outdoor world, which has, you know, different climatic fluctuations, wind, as well. You know, exposing plants to wind is pretty important. So, you know, you might start by taking them out during the day. And I'll take them out during the day and I'll take them out to a morning sun spot. So they're not getting too much
blast.
Yep. But I'll take them out during the day. So they get a little bit of a blow around in the breeze, picking up those stems, and they get some morning sunshine. But then I'll take them in overnight again. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of backwards and forwards. But after they've done that for a little while, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, depending on how they're looking and what the weather's doing, then I might you know, graduate them out to the glasshouse. My glasshouse doesn't get very hot because it's not heated in any way.
Yes.
So I'll graduate them out there, particularly if the nights are still quite cold.
Actually, the temperature fluctuation between day and night does strengthen the plant up enormously.
Yeah.
And just a few seeds actually need that to germinate. So you do need to put them somewhere where they're getting their required warmth during the day, but cold at night. Yep. Not all seeds.
That's no, just definitely a few, not all.
Just a few specialist things. Yep. But it's well worth knowing that the temperature fluctuation does actually help the plant.
Yep. It's not just light or moisture. And interesting, isn't it?
And the other tip, I think, too, Chloe, is to make sure you prick them out very quickly.
Yep.
That's where a lot of we find, you know, people who ring us or email us and say, you know, I germinated them like hair on a cat's back, but then they all died, you know. And often it's because they didn't prick them out. So if you've sown them into sterile seed raising bags, which is what you should be doing, there's no nutrients in it.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
And there's no microbes and goodies and yummies in there. So the moment they show their first set of true leaves, that's when to get the sharp pointed knife or the old biro underneath them and hoik them out and into a small pot.
Yep.
But whatever size you've got, some grow tubes or peat pots, whatever you want to do.
Sarah Guest put me on to using the old-fashioned butter knives.
Yeah,
you know,
they're
the ones
perfect.
That look like miniature trowels.
Yeah, they're perfect.
And they're great for the
Pricking out.
I used to scour the op shops for them.
But getting them out into the real world, as Chloe was saying, which is, you know, real soil and potting mix with nutrients in it. Mm. And I'm a great believer in dousing baby seedlings with either Maxi Crop or, you know, one of those, Sea Soul, one of those.
Charlie Carp, one of those.
One of those sort of products.
Stinky but good.
Stinky but good. But not too stinky because you need it fairly weak for the babies.
Nice and weak.
And just nice and weak, do it every 2 or 3 days, you know, between your normal washings, and it just hardens up those cell walls and gives them a really good tonic to start their life, and away they bounce.
And I will clarify as well, I do that pricking out process while my seedlings are still babysat indoors.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Me too.
Yeah, so especially for something like tomato seedlings,
yes,
that pricking out process into the next size pot, that still happens while they're being babysat in the warmth.
Yes.
And then once they're, you know, sort of more that, I don't know, I'm holding my fingers up, 20 centimetres tall, and we're getting towards the soil being warm enough.
Out they go. My rule of when they go out is if they're bigger than a blackbird.
Yeah, that's a fairly good point.
Is that so they can fight back?
Yes, I'm picturing tomato plants with their fists up. Oh, goodness, that is very funny. So just a reminder again, folks, if you would like to give us a call and chat on air, we would love to hear you. You don't have to ask a question. It doesn't have to be complicated. Mm. You can just ring in and have a chat to us on air.
I should finish off the talk about the Lacanalias is that they really appreciate having a gravel topping on the pot. Mm. And that helps a lot because it does stop the mud, the soil mix being washed up when it rains onto the flowers and the leaves.
Ah.
And with some Lacanalias, the foliage is just as attractive as the flowers.
Oh, yes, it can be spotted and striped.
Yes, some really good ones.
Lovely colours, yes.
And Lacanalias are one of those families that you really have to explore because there's such a divergency in them. A couple of our growers who are going to be at the Bioswap Cell, they have specialised in South African plants, and Lacanales are a big group of that group. of the plants that they grow, so you might find them at
and they're very well adjusted to our climate, aren't they?
They're well suited because they come from the Cape.
Yes, and that's right.
Places like that. Of course, we have the same climatic conditions right through Victoria.
Fun. We do have a caller. Let me see if I can get you on the line. Hello, Di. Are you there?
I am, Chloe.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, panel.
Hello. Hi, Di.
I've got a question about seed saving.
Perfect panel to ask.
I know. That's why I thought, take my chance.
Good on you, Di. Plucked up the courage. We'll be gentle, I promise.
Oh, thank you. I'm saving the seed from a really special, of all things, a marigold.
Mm, yes.
It's a tall growing, beautiful marigold called cinnabar.
Ah, yes, I know it, yes.
Oh, good, I thought you would. And if anyone hasn't seen cinnabar, because it's not available really in Australia that I can find, I got it from someone else. It's a really dark bronzy red single flower with a gold edge around the edge of the petals. It grows very tall and it's got a really beautiful leaf to flower ratio.
Yes.
So it grows as quite a big green marigold, big, quite tall, with these little spots of these gorgeous red flowers. Now, I've got two questions about it. One is that I'm getting a house renovation, so my garden's getting pulled out. Mm. So I have to save the seed of this. And I've got the seed saved from my very best plants. They're in the fridge with some dry sachets with them.
Yes.
They were harvested this season.
Yes.
So right now. But will they last for 1 year and keep their viability, or do I have to find some way to grow them on over the next summer to save
new seed? I'm sure, Di, they'll be perfectly fine in the fridge with the dry sash. I keep all our seed that, you know, we're providing to our gardeners. It's all stored permanently in the fridge until such time as we have to bring it out and package it, you know, for that week's orders.
Mm-hmm.
Because putting it in the fridge extends the viability life maybe 10 times.
Oh, wow.
Who knows?
Wow.
It varies from, you know, variety to variety, species to species. But all seed is much better stored. Veggie seed especially, because a lot of veggies lose viability quite quickly.
Yeah.
But if you store it, you'll have still quite a high generation rate next year if it's stored in the fridge. And I love your idea of having the little dry sachets in with it too, maybe in a clip-lock bag. The main thing is dry, cold, which is what a fridge usually provides, unless somebody spills the milk or something. That's why I always put them in the clip-lock bags and inside. We have a special seed fridge. We don't have any milk in ours, but they're safe. They're safe. But no, Di, you're right on the correct track. And the other thing that you might want to do just to, you know, give yourself a double insurance policy, just take some tip cuttings and overwinter those, and you'll find they'll come away nicely in the spring as well. So take some tip cuttings if you've still got, you know, tips there that hasn't been cut back by frost or anything yet. Take some tip cuttings, keep them potted up in a nice, warm, protected spot, and they'll bounce away in the spring.
And the other way of saving seeds is to give them away.
So yes, let somebody else have a go too.
If you've got a gardening friend who can grow them next year for you, just give them to them and get them to grow them, so that if your seeds, you know, don't come through, then at least you've kept the line going. That's one of the things we promote a lot in the Alpine Garden Society, is that to keep something, give it away.
Well, and then you can always ask for it back.
That's
too,
right.
Of course.
If disaster strikes.
Yeah. Or I can always go and get those cuttings or get seed.
Yes.
That's such a great idea is to share them round.
Yeah.
And that's my plan, is to share them round, because a kind person originally gave them to me. So, yeah, that's the plan. And I do have some gardening friends who would grow them on for
Perfect.
Me. Perfect.
Great. In fact, one of the best plants was grown up at my mother-in-law's place. So I was spreading them around as much as I could over even this summer so I couldn't lose them. But I've got one more question about these marigolds that are precious to me, and that is that in my mother-in-law's garden, which was facing west and regularly watered, the flowers stayed beautiful dark red with their gold edges. In my vegetable garden, which is my prime growing soil, but unfortunately, being in the city, partly shaded, they not only got a little bit more shade, but they also were wet and dry because I wasn't home all the time.
Yes.
Mm.
So they would get stressed.
Yes.
Mm. What happened to them by the end of the season, they were turning out yellow flowers.
Oh.
Yes.
What on earth is happening there?
Stress.
Yes, just stress.
Do plants do that when they're under stress, change their flower colour?
Yes, they do, yes.
Yeah.
And
oh.
Change flower size and production levels and, yes, they're very much living things. You know, when we get sick, our hair goes dull. Same thing with plants.
It's their hair version.
So the colour, the ordinary colour would be due to something like carotene and things like that. So it may not have been getting the right nutrients to be able to develop that colour again.
Mm.
So that may be something to do with, you know, a lack of water or something, that's so it's not pulling up the nutrients that it needs.
Yeah. Roses are actually a fine example of that happening, because roses change their colour. I mean, you know, orange ones don't go blue, but they they get paler or richer in colour and go more towards pink or go more towards red, depending on weather conditions and nutrient levels, etc. So, you know, we used to sell roses in our nursery days, and people would come back and say, you know, my apricot charm has decided to be orange and you've given me the wrong rose, and there'd be, you know, but when you went into it, it was actually conditions that were varying. Yeah.
It seems cruel to say, but there are actually some plants, you know, at the botanic gardens and things where we kind of love that they're a bit stressed because they bring out that amazing colour. So
exactly.
We put them in a drier spot than they like because they produce this beautiful red colour or
And also the foliage will change, you know, the size of the leaves and the greyness of the leaves in those heat-loving plants will change with less water, and that's part of the beauty. I think the foliage is a huge part of a plant's beauty.
Yes, definitely.
And
definitely.
Which is to do with, again, our lovely marigolds. So that foliage is delightful, ferny foliage.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I hope that helps, Di. There's a lot of information
really
to take in there.
No, that was fantastic information.
All right.
Because it really means the seeds on those yellow-flowered ones should come true.
Yeah.
Yes, as long as you haven't got any other colours in the garden or within bee-flying distance.
No, I was very careful about that.
Good.
Bee-flying distance, not so sure.
True. Oh, well, good luck, and I'm sure we'll keep in touch about how they're going.
Thank you.
Bye. Oh, there we go. Now we've got another caller. This time we have, let me get my fingers working. Are you there, Julie?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
hello.
Well done.
Hi, Blossom.
Oh, go. Thank you. My identity shot.
Yeah.
I was just ringing with a sort of an age-old question for me, and I'm taking it personally because I cannot get hippiastrums to flower more than little short things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, seeing you wanted questions, you've probably covered this a million times before.
No, I don't
but
think
I've
we
had
have.
No, oh, no. I've been, well, I've had them in pots and I've had them in the ground, and it is camberwell. I try and find the sunniest spot, but then I've had them in the shade to try it. This is over about 10 years. and I'm on the verge of giving up, and I've sort of tipped them out onto the soil about 3 months ago and just sort of looked at them in disgust and left them there. I haven't been back to look, but I'm just hoping that maybe they'll just get, you know, take off. But I saw them at Piersdale once. They were growing in an open paddock.
Yes.
And they were just brilliant. And I've done... I'm about to give up, so I thought Merrill or someone might be able to.
What do you think, Fermi, with hippiastrums?
Not one of the things I can grow well where we are, but...
You're in Camberwell.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, maybe I'll just stop trying because... It's more almost getting competitive because my friend at Juan Turner, she has these thunking great ones in her garden and in pots on her veranda.
Yeah,
and I thought maybe it's my soil.
They tend to like confined conditions. And the other thing is how high the bulb is up out of the ground, because a lot of bulbs really need to get their shoulders in the sun, if you understand what I mean. They've got a neck and then they swell out and they've got shoulders.
I've never buried them.
No. That height
out
of the...
And I've had them in a pot for 2 years sort of trying to crowd them.
Yes, so you're doing everything right. If it makes you feel any better, mine are shocking too. And I really think we haven't got the right climate and conditions for them. They get too much rain and they get too cold and they sulk and they're miserable and short stems and ratty leaves. They're sulky things.
Yes. I did have a big sign, you know, for myself, because I'm getting old, it's saying, do not water hippies in the park. You know, like... But, I'm happy to give up, I think.
Just join a different competition.
Yes, I'm going for geraniums lately. So
that sounds like
good.
A plan.
That's good. There's hundreds to collect. It's a good plan.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks so much, Julie.
Bye.
Bye, Julie.
Oh, what fun. We, as gardeners, we all have little arch nemesises, don't we?
Yes.
She's found hers. All right, let's do, I can see another question's popped up, but, hang on, how do I, I can't see the whole thing and now I can't find the mouse.
Oh, back here.
It's back, it's all the way back there. Producers, can you scroll up to that first, oh, here we go, we found the mouse. I just need to click on this little button that shows me the rest of the question. There we go. Okay, now I can read it all.
We're having technical troubles here.
We're
gardeners, for
that.
Goodness sakes.
I know. Well, you know, I've got two screens, two mouse or mice.
You're doing a lot.
Mouses. All right. Good morning. Thanks, Merrill. I received my blue Himalayan poppy seeds. Should I sow them in my mini hothouse now or wait until spring? Pretty. Any extra hints appreciated? And from Kooyurup.
Okay. I'd be doing it now. And if conditions are not to their liking, they'll just wait till spring anyway.
Oh,
but
nice.
I'd be doing it now because I think conditions would be to their liking. The only thing is I can see that in your question there that you're going to sow them in a mini hothouse. Just make sure that the direct sunlight doesn't strike it, because Himalayan blue poppy seeds, they do germinate really easily and very thickly. You'll get heaps and heaps of plants. But one thing that they absolutely hate is ever drying out. They live naturally. Their native habitat is in an environment that never dries out. So that's what's going to be a stumbling point. If the mini hothouse gets sun, it's going to heat up very quickly, dry out the surface of the seed raising mix, which is where your little seeds are sitting, and they're going to dry out and get very sulky. So consistent moisture is the trick with them, but they are good germinators.
Okay.
Or you could move up to the Dandenongs.
I'm sure I've told the story before, but it's such a good story and it's absolutely true. I once, when we were in Britain with a garden tour group, went to the National Collection of Himalayan blue poppies.
Oh, wow.
And it was a garden in a ravine, so it had constant moisture, air humidity, which is what they absolutely love. And they were growing wild. They were self-seeding, like thousands of them.
Oh my God.
And, of course, all of we Australian gardeners are down on our knees sobbing, sobbing with jealousy.
Envy.
And the lovely man in charge of the garden said, oh, I'd love to send you some seed. Well, I had to explain about Australian quarantine restrictions, but I said, it's okay, we can send seed out of Australia in gratitude for the joy that you've given us all today. Is there something really special that we could send you? And he said, do you have any agapanthus? So every gardener's treasure is someone else's plague.
That's so funny. Oh my goodness. Oh, there we go. Well, I hope that's answered your question there, Anne, with a really fun story tied into it as well. I love that, Meryl. We might head to Max over on the phone. Are you there, Max?
Yeah. Oh, hi. Yes, yes. I can relate to the agapanthus point here. I'm calling about my honey murcut tree. It's probably about 15 years old, and it's normally really productive. Last year, it had lots of rather small fruit. So
this is your honey murcut mandarin.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Now it hasn't. It doesn't seem to have set any fruit this season, and I'm wondering why. I've got bird netting over it to protect it from possums.
Yes. Do you think maybe the bees didn't get through the bird netting?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Are they insect pollinated? I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're onto it. It's a fairly simple story.
Now, to complicate things is I've got a daisy mandarin, not only about 3 or 4 metres from it, also covered in bird netting for the same reason, and it has set fruit.
Uh-huh.
So,
look, it is a real mystery, isn't it? The only thing I can think of is that maybe they flowered at different times and one did get pollinated before the bird netting went on. Or look, I'm not sure, but given that they're close together and both growing in the same conditions and one's, you know, setting fruit nicely and the other hasn't done anything at all, it is sounding like the bird netting, the pollinator's not getting through.
Right.
Otherwise, are both looking healthy and...
The leaf colours is you know, dark green, so they look fine in that regard, which is a bit strange because I'm not sure if I actually fed them properly last spring.
Yes.
So I think pretty sure I forgot to feed the honey murcut.
That just missing a year of feed really shouldn't throw it too much because, you know, I'm guessing they're fairly substantial trees given, you know, that they've given good crops in the past.
Yeah.
They do. Citrus trees really enjoy a little bit of feed often. They don't like a big hit. And they don't like starving, but they like a little bit often, and particularly through, strangely enough, the winter is a good time to do it, a little bit often through the winter and the spring seems to be to their taste.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Hopefully
there, we've helped.
Maybe I'll do some feeding and take the net off at the moment.
Yes,
although we won't get any more for this season.
No, that's right. They're busy making fruit now, not making flour. And good luck with your horrible possums. I love all things Australian and native, but I do hate possums.
Yeah.
I think the possum population sort of been sort of lost here temporarily at least. But when the large eucalypts in the house behind us were removed... that's when the possums came and started grazing really heavily on ours.
Yeah.
On our garden.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised to discover eucalyptus leaves are their preferred food.
You wouldn't think so.
No.
I would have
thought roses were top of their priority list.
They're certainly going for the neighbours' roses, but but that was interesting. But anyway, all right. Thank
you. That's okay, Max. No worries. Well, good luck with the rest of your mandarin season.
Yes.
thank you.
No worries. Yes. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, crazy. We've had a question from Kath in Gippsland wondering if Amy has any more wild collecting trips coming up.
Oh, as in, I wonder if they mean for escarpment or there is a very exciting trip coming up with potentially collecting some well-collected specimens, but it's actually to go to China.
I want to hear about this.
Yeah, so sorry to change the conversation from all the fun bulb. I've been learning so much, but this is more of a camellia-focused trip.
Ooh,
so
I love camellias.
Yeah. I was going to say actually when we were talking about the possums that the possums have been eating the flower buds and the tops of the camellias and their little claws scratch all the trunks of our really historic camellias in the gardens. But yes, this is sort of a amazing opportunity that Terry Smythe, who is the curator of the Southern Chinese collection at the Royal Botanic Gardens, the Melbourne site. And I have been very fortunate to get two scholarships. So we got a scholarship from the Friends of the Botanic Gardens and also through the Horticultural Enrichment Fund, which is funded by a very generous Meg Bentley. But yes, we're sort of calling this a little bit of a succession trip where Terry has been working at the gardens for over 20 years and she has been to China and collected wild-collected species and camellias many, many times for many years and built these amazing connections with a lot of botanic gardens and horticulturalists and botanists over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's succession in the sense of we're hoping to pass on those connections to me as well and build some more of sort of other maybe up-and-coming new botanists and horticulturalists too that are now working at these institutes and things. Obviously, hopefully we're going to do, the plan is we're going to do lots of field trips and go and see camellias in the wild and yellow camellias in the wild. We're very fortunate to have, again, a colleague and friend of Terry's, Professor Wang Zhonglang, who works at Kunming Botanic Gardens, is actually going to be our tour guide. So he is taking
fantastic.
Us, yes, across three provinces, again, hopefully to go in the field and get lots of information on how they're growing, climate, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If we can, there's lots of work behind the scenes going on about whether we might be able to collect some seed and things to bring back here. But it's kind of a complicated process. So it's hopefully going to happen that we could then put into the camellia collection and the Southern Chinese collection.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, fingers crossed
sort
of thing.
Is the complication the importing of the seeds and the quarantine processes and
exactly,
things?
Exactly. Mm. So the CITES and the BICON permitted species list, although there is a lot on the BICON permitted species list.
Okay.
Yes.
But
just to clarify for our listeners, even seed, which doesn't carry very much in the way of diseases or viruses, it's a fairly safe way of bringing new plants to an area, but it's not completely foolproof. So our Australian regulations quite rightly require that even seed that comes into Australia must first be examined by a scientist in an approved laboratory, so they have to check that there's no nasties that we don't want to get in Australia at the exporting end.
Mm.
And then when it arrives in Australia, our Australian Quarantine and Inspection Service then takes it, opens it all up again, has another really good look at it to make sure that the other guys didn't miss something, and then you're allowed to have it. So,
wow. And that quarantine time, like if they can sort of survive and have got the right conditions while they're in the quarantine.
Well,
I think
that's
sometimes
just seed, yes. Yeah. For live plants, it's an even more
long,
very long-term and rigorous business.
Process.
But it has to be, so there we are.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, it's there are people that, you know, we had a one of my colleagues, Joe, who recently went to Mexico and America, and they've had success in being able to bring back certain seeds and going through this process and quarantining them and acorns and things like that. So
yes, that's great.
Yes, it is possible. It's just a bit of work. So we're looking into it all. But yes, so we are going to start in Hong Kong, and obviously they have Camellia grandthamiana and Hong Kongensis and Kissia,
Crabnelliana.
We love that one. So to be able to, I guess, increase the amount of wild collected species in our collections and share that, it would be amazing. It's going to be incredible.
Mentally sponsoring it, you better bring some salvias back too.
We better have a look. I'm sure there'll be many amazing things.
But that's
there.
Such a good thing to be doing in our botanic gardens, almost like an insurance policy, because if something goes badly wrong there, we've got it here to reshare with the world. That's such an important aspect, that plant preservation.
It is.
Aspect.
And we're also, I think, which is so interesting about this project, is it's also the information. So Terry is sort of, you know, later in her career, and I'm at the beginning of mine. So also all that connection and information that Terry has to then also share it with me and share those connections, the same as ensuring that we've got, you know, camellias and things as a backup. We're ensuring the information and the connections have a backup. There's someone else to continue on or to also grow these connections. So,
And when are you heading over then?
We're going in late September, early October. Okay. So when there will be seed. I think that's autumn in China.
That's right.
So there will be seed there, hopefully. To at least observe, at least observe, if not collect. So I don't know if I mentioned, so we're going to Hong Kong, then Yunnan, which is the Kunming Botanic Gardens and Kunming Institute of Botany.
Mm-hmm.
Guizhou, which I think is, there's a lot of yellow camellia species in this area.
Ooh.
Yes. And then Guangxi, which obviously has Nanang, and it has the, I apologize for my pronunciation, Feng Cheng Golden Camellia National Nature Reserve.
Wow.
So much, you know, Kuduri Farm we were doing as well in Hong Kong. So much to see, so much to do. It's going to be amazing. So it's a 3-week trip that we'll get to do together.
Run off your trotters.
Yes, we will. I know it will be hard to remind yourself to stop and rest. We'll be so excited.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we'd camellias are so wonderful because they sport so generously.
Yes,
so
that's true.
From these new ones that we're going to get at the Melbourne Botanic Gardens, we'll then get sports happening with some beautiful things. We were lucky enough to have a visit to our garden because we've got very old camellia varieties that are no longer in commercial propagation.
Wow.
So we were lucky enough to have a visit from some members of the American Camellia Society who ran around and were very excited, you know, took lots of notes and photographs and things. And then they discovered one that they'd never seen before. And they were very excited because it is beautiful. We'd taken it for granted because it had always been in our old camellia hedge.
Yes.
But they discovered that it was a sport of one of these really old varieties that they knew from history books.
Really?
And it's produced this absolutely gorgeous new flower. So it's to be propagated in America and marketed.
It's not Daisy Eagleson, is it?
No.
No.
I don't know what they're going to call it. So.
Oh,
anyway,
I see. It's a new.
It's completely new. Never been seen before. And it was just a sport, but it was one of those gorgeous sports.
Isn't that amazing?
We were so thrilled.
They'll have to name it after you.
I hope so.
Very fascinating. That's so cool. We do have, I probably don't know enough information really to be able to share it, but we have the Camellia Daisy Eaglesons at the Botanic Gardens, not in the actual dedicated camellia collection, but in one of the other collections. But they're an American camellia. But I think that, again, they might only have one in America, so it's very special, and we're hoping to profit and share it with other gardens. But, it's one of those ones we have to fight to keep Because it is so rare.
Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating. Well, it's going to be an amazing trip.
Thank you. We'll have to make sure
you can come on afterwards.
Yes, and then yes. Maybe you should bring Terry with me back on. That would be fun. Yeah,
that'd be good.
Yeah.
We're going to take a call. And then after the call, Fermi, we're going to come and chat about some of these gorgeous plants in front of you. So let's take this call from Jill in East Brighton. Hello, Jill.
Good morning, panel. This is a bit a great discussion.
That's good.
Good morning.
And getting feedback here. So, look, I'll take it off speaker. I've got a new garden bed and I'm having a bit of stage fright about thinking about what plants to put in it, so I would appreciate some suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a west-facing garden bed. It's raised, so it has really good drainage. And anyway, we're on the sand belt.
Yeah.
We had giant clumping bamboo all along our fence to give us some privacy, but the giant clumping bamboo became so massive that we've had to remove it. We filled 2 8-metre skips.
Oh, my goodness.
It believed the giant bit in its name.
Yes, well, exactly. Silly me. And certainly when I bought it, you know, I was told it would only get to about 5 or 6 metres. Well, every year the new spears would come through and be up 2 metres above the existing canopy. And I think, can't get any taller. And then the next year the same.
Well, so now that's gone, but you're looking for... Yes. Are you looking for height, or are you looking for colour? Or
I'm looking for perhaps about maybe 4 metres would be ample.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking of perhaps something like, you know, some small trees, large shrubs along the back fence, you know, against the fence, but something that's not too wide, because the garden bed itself is only about 2 and a bit metres at its widest. It's a curving bed. It goes down to 1 metre at one end.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it will be in full sun and some will have a bit of shade up the narrow end. I was hoping I might try to grow a waratah up the shady end.
Yes, good idea.
But, yes, and one of the guys who's been... It took 5 days to dig out all the roots. Well, he suggested perhaps Backhausia citriodora, you know, the lemon myrtle, saying, you know, down here it wouldn't grow so big, and all the information on that says the same. But I didn't know whether you thought that was could be a good option or not for the back of the bed.
The situation of the bed, facing west and raised and very well draining, my mind fell immediately to salvias. They wouldn't be tall enough.
I've got a lot of salvias around the front and I can do some around the back.
Good. That wouldn't, of course, do for your screen at the back.
No.
But the beauty of salvias, if you choose varieties, think about choosing varieties, you can actually have a salvia in flower, different ones, of course, all year round. And that's a great benefit because... A, it feeds our bees and our lovely pollinators all year round and keeps them in our area and keeps them well fed and happy, including birds. Nectar-eating birds just adore salvias.
Yes. I have about a dozen species around the front garden, and with exactly that in mind.
Yes. So they're great for year-round colour, great for year-round pollinators. And they will suit the conditions really well. But we've got to think of something for your height, your screen at the back.
That would be great.
There's a crab apple that we grow called, I think it's called Sentinel.
Mm. Yes.
And it's amazed me by how tall it's grown without putting a lot of width.
Yes, that's right. And there are not just
crab. Can I just say one other thing is, got to be possum proof, and I would prefer evergreen because of the screening, because we do have a two-story townhouse right near our back fence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you grow Sentinel and can grow a Clematis napolensis through it, so it's in leaf in the winter.
Ooh. That's a lovely idea because
Can you give me the name of the crab apple again?
It's Sentinel.
Crab apple Sentinel.
Yes, I did have a crab apple, but the possums killed it.
Ah, right, okay.
But
possum plagued.
oh, Oh, God, yes. We live in Possum City here.
Yes. There are camellias that are very narrow growing, but the west-facing raised well drained is putting them out of the question, I think.
Yes, it would have to be pretty sun hardy because the fence is a dark fence. It's virtually black.
Mm. Mm. I'm mentally walking around my garden thinking, what am I seeing that will fit the bill?
Amy?
Up for discussion, but what about, it might not be tall enough, but like the Acacia agraphylla, do you know that one? Or maybe is that too wide?
Could I prune it? Does it grow wider than tall or taller than wide?
Well, so I'm just basing mine off the ones that are growing in the grey garden, and I think at the moment mine are taller than they are wide, but I may have pruned it. So you can definitely prune it.
What's it? It's Acacia. What was the
agraphylla? Would you like me to spell? I know that's sort of a long one. So A-R-G.
A-R-G, yes.
Y-R-O.
Y-R-O, yes.
P-H-Y.
Yes, and then L-L-A.
That's the one, yes.
Agraphylla, right.
Yes.
Thank you.
I mean, what did the panel think? Do you think that might be
an
appropriate
one? That's a good suggestion.
Yep.
And there's also some wonderful Australian natives, including acacias, that they're now growing as grafted standards that are very narrow indeed.
Mm.
There's some grevilleas that are being tall grafted as weeping standards. They would look so elegant.
You know,
waterfall of gorgeous foliage.
I like the idea
colour.
Of the acacia, maybe the waratah in the shady spot, and maybe some of the grevilleas mixed in as well.
Yes.
I was in WA last weekend for the Kalamunda Garden Festival, and I stayed with my cousins who live in Nedlands, and I mean all of WA's sand.
Yes.
A bit like where you are, Jill. And there was the most beautiful grevillea in flower down the middle of the garden, you know, what are they called? Verges, right next to King's Park. And I had to Google it instantly. It's Grevillea oligomera. And it had the floatiest, they almost look like little pink or reddish birds darting above the plants. And it's got these lovely, soft, feathery leaves. And I've had a bit of a Google here in Victoria, and it looks like Vaughan does stock some of them.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Could I have the Grevillea? What was the second one?
Grevillea oligomera, oligomera.
And there's a couple of good suggestions with lovely listeners texting in.
Oh, there we go. Someone's
in,
hakeas
yes.
with the interesting leaves would be wonderful.
Hakeas.
A tall and narrow Banksia cultivar. Oh, there's a tall Banksia cultivar called Sentinel as well. Standard name for anything that's tall and skinny.
Yes.
So I think you could have a really beautiful, you know, native.
Yes. And I'd love to do some more natives.
And that would help the birds and pollinators. It's sounding a good direction, Jill.
Oh, well, I hope that helps, Jill.
That's so exciting,
terrific.
Jill.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm thinking, I'm of an age where I really shouldn't be having more garden beds.
No, don't be silly.
No such thing. Well, all the best.
That's right. That's what I think.
Good luck with it all.
Thanks so
Jill.
Much. That's
thanks,
wonderful.
Jill.
And a great discussion. I really enjoyed listening.
Oh,
yep.
thank you
thank
so much,
you.
Jill.
Okay.
So bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wow, what fun. All right, Fermi, let's move on to this. We're at the point where we've got literally 20 minutes again, and I'm like, no!
Okay, I've got three nereens that are in flower now. So the white, what used to be called Flexuosa alba, which is now included in undulata folia or something like that. I call it Flexuosa alba. This was the winter flowering nereening when I was growing up. It was the only one around. Then there's this pink one, which is possibly a one that was called Winter Cheer, and it's very popular. And this one is an unnamed hybrid that I got from my sister-in-law, I think.
Mm.
And it's very similar, but it has a little bit of purple in
it
the petals.
Yeah, so, it's sort of a little bit more crimson.
I thought nereens are probably another South African plant, a great one to plant in Australia because, particularly around Melbourne, because they do so well with the climate.
Yes.
And you can have nereens that flower right through from March, mm-hmm. with some of the small species ones, through to April is probably the peak, and then May with the whites and the Bowdenii, and then you'll get a few more lasting into June, including the winter cheer.
Okay.
So they're
And their common name of spider flowers is
you can
perfect,
see why.
Isn't it? Mm. They yep. really are spidery heads of flowers. Very beautiful.
And for people who haven't grown nereens, the conditions for growth, can you give people that?
They don't like being disturbed. So usually the first year you plant them, they won't flower.
Okay.
But you can buy them as dry bulbs, not mm-hmm. quite dry, because the roots stay active.
Okay.
Better to buy them in pots and plant them out. They like well-drained soil. They like elevated, you know, a garden bed is fine. They'll grow fine in pots.
And, they do.
Yeah, so they're ones. Okay. The first one I ever got that wasn't a pink or white was the red one that we used to call Fothergilla Major, mm-hmm. which is a brilliant red one. And
I like the gold-dusted ones.
The gold dusting on them. Yes.
They have flecks of gold all over the petals. Ooh. That just shimmer. Oh,
yeah,
they're gorgeous.
Pretty.
They're wonderful things. What I found when we moved to Reedsdale is that not all of them like the minus 7 degrees we can sometimes get. So, but Fothergilla Major comes through quite well. Winter Cheer is fine unless we get a really hard frost.
Yep.
Then there's quite a few. The ones that are popular at the moment, the Sarniensis hybrids, mm-hmm. and they're the ones you'll find in a lot of nurseries with selling the different coloured nereens now.
Okay.
Sarniensis is a little bit more frost tender.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we have to grow them in the shade house.
Mm-hmm.
But they will grow and flower,
and
they should be fine in
Melbourne. They don't mind a bit of shade, I find, Fermi.
No.
We planted our nereens before the trees were big, but now the trees are very big, and so the nereens are quite shaded, but they still come shining through. We particularly like the winter flowering ones to get that winter colour. Yeah. And they're great cut flowers in a vase for our flower growers. Mm-hmm. They were old commercial cut flower varieties. They're very, very popular with cut flower people because they last a long time in the vase.
So there's something with.
What about this? Like this one down that I'm pointing to, of course, people can't see this, but it literally looks like you have three different plants in one pot.
Yeah. It does.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
So there's three different leaf forms or bracts.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a plant called Androsymbium striatum. which some taxonomists have now decided is a colchicum.
Ah.
I don't know why, and I don't believe them, and I disagree. But it looks nothing like a colchicum from what we know as colchicums, which are, of course, also called meadow saffron and names like that, which is also deceiving. This looks more like a plant that used to be grown a lot called Moses and the bulrushes.
Yes.
And it's basically a boat-shaped flower or bracts around the flowers.
So they're the flowers.
White and green striped things.
With pink flush.
Bases. Yeah. Mm. So they're quite an interesting looking thing. I grew this from seed and embarrassingly it took me 17 years to get it to flower.
Wow.
But it will do better from bulbs. This is another thing that Gary Reed grows up in Allen's Flat. And so you could always contact him if you want to get some. So they're quite an interesting looking thing.
But now it flowers for you every year?
It's flowered the last 2 years, so that's good. Amazing. And I think it's getting to the point where I'm going to have to get a bigger pot or divide it.
Yeah.
We're all hanging on you dividing it.
Yeah.
I will talk about one more if we've got time, and that's these are cyclamen.
Uh-huh. Oh, so I just love them.
It's so pretty.
Cyclamen were my gateway drug into rock gardening. And I've brought this one for the foliage because it's Cyclamen graecum, which flowers in autumn.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the good thing about cyclamen is that even when they're not in flower, you have wonderful foliage.
Yes. And the marbling, the silver marbling.
It's got the two-tone marbling.
Yeah,
so
it's
that's
gorgeous.
The cyclamen graecum. Cyclamen neapolitanum, which is a lovely name, mm-hmm. it's now called Cyclamen heterofolium, meaning leaf like a hetera or mm-hmm. ivy. This is one of the silver or grey leaf or pewter leaf one, forms. So this actually belongs to my partner, Will, because he won it in a prize.
Oh, wow.
And these grow incredibly well in Melbourne, and they're ones that everybody should look forward to. And as they're grey leafed, I'll give that one to you, Amy.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you they grow really well from seed.
Mm.
And the trick is to bury the seed. You can just plant the seed out in the garden.
They don't want light. Yeah.
Sorry?
They don't want light to germinate.
No, they germinate in the dark. And the seed is in nature distributed by ants. The seed is very clever and has a sweet coating on it, which attracts the ants who take it and bury the seed.
Yep.
Seed says, yippee, I'm going to grow like mad. So when you want them to mass up in your garden, I actually have them planted in amongst the roots of rhododendrons, which keeps them nice and dry, well-drained, and they love the shade. And they just self-seed with the help of the ants madly to make a carpet of these gorgeous silver and
so would you say part shade is ideal? Part shade, full shade?
Or full shade.
Okay. Either.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. It's beautiful.
That sounds incredible. We've had a few more.
Yes, it's wonderful.
A few more listeners message in. Roger Elliott says the Acacia agrophylla is an excellent hedging choice.
Mm-hmm.
Always good. Julie says she's got two backhousias and they hide her fence really well. They provide leaves for tea and food and shelter for birds, and of course are obviously evergreen. And yes, in Melbourne they won't get as huge as said. What about a native frangipani? I love the native frangipani.
Yes,
that's a great one.
And Jill also suggested Grevillea flexuosa. Flexuosa?
Flexuosa.
I never say them correctly.
flexuosa.
And I think that was, we're back to the other ones that people
there was
suggested.
One with a hakea as well.
Yes,
below that.
Nicola suggested fabulous hakea, really interesting different shaped leaves. And some
grows
of them do
as
grow
as a column.
Yeah, some of them do grow as a column as well, yep. Mm. And a lot of those can take a bit of pruning as well, so.
So fun explorations and research for Jill.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. The native frangipani, you can really prune off those lower leaves to get top growth.
And then
as
you
well.
Can plant the salvia.
Exactly, underneath.
Yes.
We've love got it.
It's planned.
We've got your garden sorted. you've got a little crocus there. I reckon you've got time to tell us about Fermi.
Look, this is a crocus. I was given this pot only a couple of weeks ago by a friend in Kyneton who has it coming up everywhere in her bulb bed because the blackbirds scratch up the corms when they're dormant and scatter them.
Spreads around.
But this one is called Crocus levigata.
Does it smell?
Levigatus, and it has a honey scent.
Oh,
and we like should, really strong.
And
really?
We should mention, Fermi,
that's
some
beautiful.
Of the,
oh
the lovely little cyclamens have beautiful scents.
Yeah.
The coombs have lovely scent.
And they're winter flowering, so they're very good.
So strong.
So there's a lot of really good things.
Wow.
This, the cyclamen levigatus, when they're in bud, they're amazing because they have these dark purple feathering to the back of the petals. So in bud, you just see this pale mauve bud with this dark feathering. When they open up, they've got this deep yellow stigma with surrounded by white pollen on the anthers. And they're a really lovely plant.
Very pretty.
Crocus are another thing that we really promote the AGS, and we actually have a crocus group within the AGS.
Oh my goodness!
But who wouldn't love something that flowers, like the cyclamen and the crocus, that flowers in the middle of winter?
Mm.
And yes, they're tiny treasures, but that's what's so beautiful in winter because you've got the excuse to go for a little walk, to see your little treasures, and here's this pop of colour in amongst all the grey. Oh,
yeah,
the winter flowering thing's great.
Mm. The Cyclamen Society have a motto which is, you haven't got anything flowering in your garden this month, then you mustn't be growing cyclamen. So and you should be able to have cyclamen in
and
flower
every month of the year. Exactly. Yeah. And the interesting thing about winter flowering plants is they're often beautifully scented because they need to use their scent to haul the pollinators in. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can't say I've stuck my nose in a cyclamen flower before. Ooh, I've not tried, isn't that?
Some varieties are very sweetly scented.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. There we go. Did you have any others that you...
There is a couple of things. Well, this is, speaking of winter flowering, this is the winter flowering honeysuckle, Lonicera fragmentissima. And
thank you.
It has wonderful... lemony
that's
sort
lovely.
Of scent.
That's really lovely.
Oh, and that smells like a perfume.
It does, doesn't it?
And it's not a climber, folks. This is a nice, well, fairly tallish shrub and very rounded in shape. So it's as wide as it's high. And in the winter, it's covered with these creamy, lemony, white flowers with, the most bewitching scent.
That's such a beautiful scent. It literally smells like a perfume.
Yeah.
We're all fighting over it, folks, to see who can have the most sniffs.
The good thing is that I first grew this as a cutting when it was in flower.
Oh.
Wow.
So you can take them
home. We can take a cut. Okay, now can you just say the name again for us?
Lonicera, Lonicera.
Yep.
Era, yes. Fragrantissima. This is F-R-A-N-G, fragrantissima. T-I-S-S-I-M-A.
Yep, got it.
Okay. And, which means the most fragrant.
Yes.
And I can't grow witch hazel because it doesn't take our heat, but the honeysuckle does well. After we'd planted ours and it was growing quite well, and it's not a nice, quite a nice bush, walking down the street from the cafe to our house, I noticed in the paddock, there's this, on the fence line, is this huge Lonicera fragrantissima.
Yeah, that's so lovely. The smell reminds me of something. It's in the Southern Chinese collection, and it's got a little yellow flower.
Oh, Azara? No, more vanilla.
I feel like it's from Yunnan. It's really unhelpful. Yeah. It's going to come to me and it'll be as soon as we finish the show.
Of course.
That's what it smells like to me.
We've had a question I've missed. Sorry about that, George. George asks, can you please give me some advice about planting in my mixed bag of poppies from seed and when to plant echinaceas and foxgloves? You have like 4 minutes to do so.
Well, the mixed bag of poppy seeds, I'd be ripping into it. And a little tip sowing poppies, if you're sowing them outdoors, I like to put a little covering of grit or even bluestone chips. The poppy seeds love to germinate in gravel and they come up like, you know, hairs on a cat's back. And now is a good time to do it and they'll spring away as soon as spring conditions are right for them. Planting echinaceas like warmth. So if you're planting plants, I'd wait until, you know, spring and the soil has warmed up. If you're doing seed and you've got a heat bed, now is a great, well, by next week, once the, you know, the days start to lengthen, it's a great time to go for it. Foxgloves are very well planted outdoors. You can just scatter the seed. And foxglove seed is so prolific. You can afford to waste some to the possums and the slugs and the snails and everybody else who likes a chew. So just scatter that and they'll come away in the spring. But the main thing with poppies is they absolutely hate root disturbance. Oh. So if you're not sowing them outdoors directly in the garden, get your seed, mix it with some finely sieved seed raising mix and shake like mad to get the seed distributed through the mix.
Yep.
And then you just take the tiniest pinch and put it into a fairly deep tube so that once they've germinated and your plants are big enough to beat the blackbirds, then you plant the whole tube full out in the garden without disturbing them at all.
So by tube, do you mean like toilet roll tube?
Or something like that.
Something
or
that's
a
narrow.
Forestry. Well, something that's deep.
Narrow.
Because they
deep.
Get their roots down quite quickly.
Recycled
coffee cups. Anything. But just put the tiniest pinch mixed already,
okay.
So because poppy seed is extremely fine.
Yeah.
And if you just try and scatter it or put a pinch in each pot, you'll have 500 plants in one pot, and then they'll, you know, outcompete each other. So you've got to thin them out.
Okay, all right. And they don't need warmth or anything to...
No, they'll just come.
Yeah, I just normally sprinkle them in the garden.
Exactly, yeah. But amongst gravel is great. You get really good germination. Mm. And that helps to protect the young seedlings from the slugs and snails.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully, George, that will all help.
Well done, Meryl.
Yeah, there we go.
Great.
Minor information there.
Yeah.
I don't know about anyone else. Has anyone else noticed that there's not a huge amount of slugs and snails at the moment, or is that just my garden?
No, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, you've got them all. There we go. They've all migrated up to you. No, I feel like it's the, I don't know if it's the colder weather's not as around, or is it just not as consistent rain. Mm. But, you know, normally at this time of the year I've got,
maybe the long dry we had.
Yeah, I feel like
decreased the population. Yeah, that's true. Hopefully the birds are getting them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fermi's going to start walloping us on the head if we go over time, but you've got to tell us what this bomby knocker slash...
It's a cudgel.
I suspect it's a tromboncino.
It's a tromboncino. It's the first time we've grown it. We planted them very late, October, so we only got a few fruit. But we're looking forward for this to harden up a bit, and then we might try and roast it or something. Mm-hmm. So it's a large, it looks like a gourd with an, it's like the giraffe of gourds.
Yeah.
It's got a neck that's about half a metre long.
It's very long.
And then the bulbous end where the seeds are. So,
and they store quite well, don't they?
They do, apparently.
Mm, if they're
this is the first year we've grown them. But
okay.
Yeah, so we're hoping we can... we can grow, have enough, there are enough seeds in this one to grow next year's as well. But
actually, for pumpkins, it's been a bit tricky because we grew nice pumpkins, but we haven't had any frost yet to harden them up. This is unseasonably warm.
Mm. Yeah.
So the foliage has died away, and you'd be thinking, oh, your pumpkins are ready to take in now. But they haven't hardened up and ripened up because no frosts, sweetened.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we are going to have to start wrapping the show off.
Yes,
which happens every Sunday. And we're always flabbergasted that it does happen.
It goes so quickly. And thank you to all the people who called in and texted in. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your support.
Yes,
so lovely.
You.
So lovely. The the phones and the texts were running hot. So we've got to say a massive thank you to Bern and Pia in the producer studio for handling that all. Thank you so much, ladies.
Yes.
That was fabulous. Round of applause. Big thank you to Daniel Jackson and Liam Killick for doing our socials and keeping you all up to date. We will take photos of everything we've spoken about and put them up on our socials as well.
Mm-hmm.
Big thank you to our wonderful guests, Fermi D'Souza, Amy Downey and Meryl Johnson. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you all and chatting plants with you. And thank you to you, our fabulous listeners who've tuned in. We love it that you tune in live, but for those of you who tune in via the podcast, we love you just as much. And if you do listen to this on a podcasting app, we'd love it if you left us a rating and review.
And thank you, Chloe, for leading the team.
Thank you, and apologies for the technical hiccup if you caught the first 3 minutes of silence. Maybe everyone was still sleepy and they didn't notice.
Yes, they were glad they weren't interrupted.
Exactly. I'm Chloe Thompson, and you have been listening to the 3CR Gardening Show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll chat gardening with you again soon. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you found it valuable, please consider donating and subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.